So Here's What Happened is a proud member of the But Why Though podcast community. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of So Here's What Happened. I'm Nisha.
And I'm Carolyn.
And we are back to talk about all the things we have watched and read in the month of September. September. That's the month that just happened. I just have to think about it for a minute. We are already in October.
I know. And September felt really long. Like,
it felt obscenely long.
This year.
For no reason.
This year has been weird. Like, all the months are short. But yeah, still feels super long. Sure. Like, I was just thinking about it the other day. Like, Us came out this year. And I'm like, we're still in 2019. And Us feels like it came out, like, 2 years ago.
Same. I was literally like... what movie was on TV? And I was just like, this just came out 2 years ago. I'm like, nope, this came out earlier this year. I was just like, wow, time has flown by.
Yeah.
Just like in a weird way. I don't know. Time is funny as we get older. But anywho, actually, I feel like September was the longest for you because you were at TIFF.
I was.
For what felt like forever.
I was at TIFF from beginning to end. And it was fun and exhausting and entertaining and exciting, and I'm glad I went.
Girl, I bet. It looks awesome. And you got to see so many things.
I did. I saw a good number of films. I saw more films this year than I did last year. Last year, I think I saw 11, 12 films. This year, I think I saw maybe 16, 17 films, possibly.
Good Lord.
I think so, yeah. I know there's people who saw like double that. I don't know how they do it, but...
Nope. That ain't for me. Oh yeah, no, I bet. No, but that's awesome. And then for you guys, if you haven't caught up on them yet, but Carolyn has had a bunch of great interviews with some of the directors and stars from the films that she saw at TIFF, and those episodes are available to listen to if you have not listened to them yet.
Yeah, I did.
Make sure y'all get to them.
Yeah, I did a few interviews with writers and directors. I didn't get a chance to interview any actors this time around.
That's right. That was a director. I think I've like melded all of them in my brain since it's like okay. From editing them.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It was all confusion. Like, so, but no, I did. I interviewed 4 directors and writers, and which I did. I think I enjoyed all of my interviews. So those will be posted on the site under TIFF and under Carolyn Talks and under the podcast link. So basically, if you just go on the website and put TIFF in the search engine, TIFF, you'll find it. And there's the interviews and also reviews for films that I didn't do interviews for. I have, as we're recording this, I'm working on my last one, which is for a film called Coming Home Again by Wayne Wang. And this one, I was telling you guys in the DMs, I saved this one for last because this is the one that turned me into an emotional wreck. Like, I saw a lot of films this year that dealt with like cancer and death and grief, and I mentioned it before in our previous recording, like I had surgery.
You did.
Yeah, I did.
We like lightly mentioned it, but if you want to like refresh the people, feel free.
Yeah, so what happened was in August I had surgery to remove it's called a lytic tumor, which means that it's a tumor encased in bone. So it's not in the soft tissue, like in the brain tissue, but it was encased in the bone. So it's called a lytic tumor. And I had surgery to remove that entire tumor, and it was replaced with a titanium mesh plate. So I'm a bionic woman now. I had that done on August 13th. So I did TIFF literally the month after. And... So a lot of the films that I didn't even plan to, like, because sometimes in the synopsis in films, they don't tell you what's going on. They just say, oh, this person deals with a health issue or like grief or whatever. And it ended up like more than half the films I watched had dealt with like cancer and people with tumors. And it was like, what is going on? but so this festival season was way more emotional for me than last year. It was somewhat it was very hard for me emotionally to get through a lot of the screenings and stuff, because a lot of the stuff I really did truly relate to. And Coming Home Again was one of the hardest ones because it dealt with cancer, and like this is something that I dealt with not only with my own fear of the tumor possibly being cancer, but also my grandmother died of cancer. My aunt had breast cancer, and my my dad had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He's, thank God, fully cured now, so they said. And I also, and his brother also died of cancer too, so it's like, that's like very predominant in my family on both sides. So like, when I watch all these films, and then Coming Home Again was one of the last ones I saw, which I think was a good thing, because I really that one was like super hard for me to get through. And but it's also a lovely film, and I'm actually working on my review for it today. And it took me a while to even start doing it, because I was like, I'm not emotionally ready to do this. And and like, the way he does it, he deals with like food and how food and culture and heritage and all of it is interconnected, and how it allows people to process different emotions. And so I like, even the way he starts, so the first shot of the film is about the main character, Chang Rei. He's like cutting up a side of beef, and I'm like, to anyone, this is like, this is a shot of just him cutting beef. I'm like, no, this is, he's telling a whole story. I'm like, I watched my grandmother cut beef like the way he was doing, and I was like, so I immediately connected to that and everything. But I'm digressing. But yeah, it was this season was really emotional for me. This has been an emotional year for me, I'm glad I went to the festival. I had fun. I did karaoke. I met old friends that I met on Twitter, like film critics and new friends, and I'm happy that I went, and it all turned out great. It's been taking me a little bit longer to write my reviews than I would like, but have to learn to pace myself, and I'll feel guilty about it.
That's good. Never make yourself feel guilty about it, especially when it comes to your health and pacing yourself.
I know, but that's the thing, right? Like, especially people in our industry, like, we want to make sure we do things quickly, but then it's like, you know, you can't physically do it, but then you're also like, but I want to, and then it's like, trying is a battle, is a learning process on learning how not to feel guilty for taking time for yourself. Like, we call it self-care now, but it's just basically like taking time for you, and like, but it's like something that we still have to break out of, you know?
Yeah, there's also this really good, I always think of this really good comic strip. It's the person is called Chuck Draws on Twitter, and the comic is, his comic always features, I mean their comic, sorry, their comic always features a pigeon, and the pigeon, I think, is the representative of Chuck. So then there's this one strip where the pigeon is laying down in bed, and it's like, internal thoughts are, why do I feel like garbage? I should be doing something. I shouldn't just be laying in bed. And like, why do I always feel guilty when I'm resting? And the pigeon's like conscience pops up and says, that's because capitalism has tricked you to make you feel like you have to constantly be producing something. And then the pigeon's like double conscious pops up, like, no, it's a lie, you're lazy. And then the angel conscious puts a knife to the devil conscious and like, listen here, you little shit.
He's like, shut up.
Shut up and let them rest. And then the pigeon like has peace, like, ah, yeah, that's right. And I'm just, it always makes me think of like, I too struggle with feeling like if I'm not doing something, I make myself feel guilty internally for not producing something.
Yes.
And I've learned that's how I burn myself out a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, granted, look at me. I have 3/4 podcasts.
I know. You do. It's ridiculous. So,
and if I start a fifth one, I've told people that they're allowed to have an intervention for me, because I'm not allowed to do anymore, at least for like the next year.
You'd be ridiculous.
I have other projects going. I'd be ridiculous. I know. And no one, and y'all need to take my phone away before Twitter after dark. But I joke, but I too also digress. I totally understand what the pressures of wanting to get things done fast, especially in this field where entertainment is just so quick.
Yeah,
when it comes to getting things out and being and trying to have the first out and like get things there how we want to have them. But also, I want to say you a good one for watching all those movies, because I have a very strict rule. I don't watch a lot of movies that make me cry. I pick my times of the year when I want to cry when it comes to movies. Mm-hmm. And when I'm caught off guard, I be so like, well, now I have to watch it and find out how it ends. But I get so irritated when I've watched a movie and then I'm like, no one told me it was about death. No one told me. And I mean, like, death as in like an emotional, drawn out death, like that kind of thing. Because similar to you, like, I've had, my grandmother had breast cancer. And I've had, like, my grandfather had it and another thing. So it's one of those things where I'm like, I need to figure out how to handle that. Like, therapy sounds like the one way to do it. Or I can start another podcast.
But
that's the
thing, right? Like, but, like, the thing is like, as I said, like, I didn't realize a lot of the films were going to be about specifically cancer. And, like, even there was even a couple where a couple of the characters had brain tumors, too. And I'm like, seriously, what's going on? Mm-hmm. But that, for me, like, the whole thing, watching these kind of films started... my sister's home. She's going to keep all my noise coming into the house. So, listeners, please forgive me if you hear my sister keeping a whole bunch of noise in the background.
It's
it all
good.
Started with me with, like, Lulu Wang's film, The Farewell, which I saw when I was in L.A. in July. And, like, for me, and I spoke to a couple people, a couple of friends about this during TIFF, is, for me, I didn't realize that I was grieving this year, and it's about personal grief, like the whole thing, like, you know, when we think of grief, you always think of grief applying to people, like, after they died, and, like, but yeah. There's, like, you can grieve for yourself, and, like, that only occurred to me, like, after I saw the film. I was like, and, like, because I was sad and I was experiencing a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of stuff I didn't talk about, and I didn't tell a lot of people the things that I was thinking and going through, and I was like, I'm grieving, I'm sad, because I'm like, if this shit turns out to be cancer, I'm like, what the hell? Right? And it was like thinking, I'm like, because there's always a 50-50 chance it is cancer or it's not. And, like, for me, it was like, I was, like, going through this whole thing, like, and it's about that. And then it was also with the MS. And I'm like, can I get a freaking break? So I was going through this whole grieving process and I didn't realize it. And it was only, and then I only, like, realized this, like, when I came home in August. I had this epiphany moment where I'm like, I'm sad, but it's not just sadness, it's grief. And then I watched all of these films during TIFF, and I'm like, yep, it's grief. There is a difference. And, like, there's this article I want to write, and I'm like, just, I have this whole thing in my head, but I'm like, just to sit on a trend, attempt to write it, it has been, like, a challenge for me. But, yeah, but I'm glad that I saw the films that I did, because it has helped me process it and to acknowledge that I'm still going through this whole emotional process of, like, how my health has affected me emotionally and mentally and all that kind of stuff. So, like even talking about it, like, I didn't talk about it before, but, like, I told myself I need to talk about this stuff more, because it not only helps me, but it might help someone else too. And, like, I think that's a problem with us, like, with people, like, we try to keep everything on the inside, and we are like, we don't want to bother anyone, and we think no one wants to hear this and everything. And, like, it is, but we shouldn't be that way. And, like, there was a moment when I was at TIFF, there was this conference, this seminar that Wang, she did a speaking event during TIFF, and I was there, and I got up, and I swear to God, I had my question in my head, and I didn't want to be one of those people that, you know, when you do Q&As, like, they get up and they ramble or talk about something completely irrelevant, and I had my question. And I started talking, and I was like, and I was like, I had to thank her, because that film meant so much to me, like, to me personally. And I was like, oh, God, Karen, what did you just do? And I felt so bad, and I felt like, because I was, like, there technically as a journalist too, and I felt so bad, and I felt like it was being unprofessional. But then afterwards, I met this girl, and she's like, thank you for saying that, because she had she went through something similar with her family member. She's like, thank you for saying that, because that's the same way I feel about the film. And I was like, at least I didn't piss off one person. So I'm like, yeah, it was worth it.
That's good. Yeah.
But yeah, this year has been weird. It's been odd. Like, 2019 has been odd in general.
Yeah, you know, really, really looking forward to for 2020 to come.
Just, could be a bit better.
I know. Yeah. I think that's how we all feel at the end of this year, as we get to the last quarter of the year. I'm kind of just like, yeah, I'm ready for 2020.
Yeah. I want some more. I want some more up moments. I need some more up moments than I've had down moments. Like, you know, there's going to be bad coming and bad stuff, but I'm like, can I get a bit more up moments this same way as I get the bad? Just give me some more good.
I agree. Here's to more up moments, girl.
Yeah.
Just here. But again, y'all should check out all the amazing things Carolyn has done at TIFF. Because first off, I applaud you for all the work you've done with that.
Thank you.
And I think a lot of I can't wait, and I hope to have the opportunity to watch a lot of the films that you saw once they get a wider release. But y'all can at least get in on the exclusive interviews that she did.
Yes, get in on
with
those.
That, yeah. I think maybe if we have time, I say this as I know both of us have busy lives, we should try to like squeeze in one more episode, maybe like a TIFF recap episode.
Oh, we could. Yeah, we could do that.
That way you can talk more about like, oh, your top films and like, you know, we can talk about this more offline. Yeah, but just as a suggestion.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, more time. And because one of the films I'm going to talk about today is one of the films I saw at TIFF. I'm not sure when it's going to get wide release as yet, but it's a really good film. And I didn't write a review for it, so I thought I'd talk about it. And like, there aren't any other big movies that came out this month, were there?
No.
Right.
No. September was dry.
Yep.
So we'll get to that though. But to kick things off, let's get into the reading corner. Mm-hmm. Would you like to go first?
Yeah, the reading corner. So I had started reading this romance novel and I was going to review it. And then mm-hmm. it went into this territory. I'm like, I am not comfortable with this storyline. So I changed my mind. I'm not going to review it because it's about... basically, it's about, you know how for charity events you can have auctions for people, you know, like you like someone will like they like auction a date, like a date or whatever. And yeah, I used to read a lot of those kind of storylines back in the day, and it's a Harley Quinn book, and it starts out really good, but then I was like, I don't feel comfortable with this storyline, and I'm like, maybe it was just a frame of mind that I was in, but it's a bit, and the thing that really bugged me is the female character. So she's white and he's black. No, sorry, he's black. I'm just saying she's black and he's white. So she's gonna auction herself for charity and to this white man to get her best friend's attention. I'm like, it's not. I'm like,
how does that to get her best is the best friend someone she was in love with all along? Like, of course.
Yeah, but
why,
I'm like,
why
can't you use some other method to get his attention? You're gonna go and auction yourself. I mean, like, other people were doing it, but then it's the whole optics of her being black and him being white and the whole thing. She was like, oh, she never used to feel comfortable about herself because she's curvy and all that kind of stuff, but then she's gonna be, I'm gonna get all sexy and stuff and for him to notice me finally. And I'm like,
I think I'm just kind of tired of that narrative of just like, I'll make myself sexier for him or like it could be a woman or a man, either one, of just like, I've been in the friend zone for all these years and they've never really looked at me. I'm like, have you ever really said that you're interested in
this?
That's
the thing.
But of course, this is a romance novel, so I understand the need for plot.
Yeah, no.
But yeah.
I guess maybe I might finish it, but I'm like, the frame of mind that I was in, I was like, no, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
I
can't do this.
But see, that's like me whenever I find like a good fan fiction. Like, I love Michonne and Rick fanfic.
Girl.
But girl, I get so irritated when I find like I'm invested 5 to 10 chapters in, and then I find out someone has basically they've fetishized her.
Yeah,
because they'll equate her skin to chocolate, and then I'll immediately throw my phone away. So I can get like what you're saying. It's kind of like in that same vein almost. Yeah. It sounds like of just like, ooh, makes me feel icky, or like when people be straight up, like it just feels off. Like it doesn't. I don't know. If it was a romantic comedy, I might be down for it. If it was a movie, because then I don't have to take my time and read it, which I feel like is longer. Yeah. But. I don't know.
Yeah, I might read it to finish it, because one thing I don't really like doing is starting books to finish. There's very few instances where I've ever started a book and never completed it. One of them was War and Peace. That book is ridiculously long and there are too many characters. This one, I think it's just my frame up, just where I was mentally, and I just wasn't feeling it. So I think that's it. I might pick it up again to finish it. So unfortunately, I don't have like a full review of it. I'm not going to say who the book is by and the title because since I didn't finish the whole book, I don't think it would be fair. To do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but I just was like, oh, come on, do we have to do this again? Because I read so much of those like kind of storylines like back in the early 2000s and 90s, like in Harley Quinn and Silhouette romances and that kind of stuff. I'm like, oh, I can't.
So well, I hope it turns around as you read it more.
Yeah, maybe when I'm in a better, I don't know, maybe it's just when I'm in a better headspace or whatever. But what did you read?
Yeah.
What manga about torturous children have you read this time?
So it's not children this time. Oh. Sorry, I realized that cackle was a bit on the witchy side. I'll calm down, but it is funny. So y'all might remember a little manga called Berserk.
Yes.
That I reviewed on here before.
Yes.
So I got to do an advanced review of the 40th volume from Dark Horse Comics for But Why, though. The full review is on the website if y'all are interested in reading it. But I felt so strongly about this volume that I needed to review it with y'all because I have feelings that I could not put it to paper when I was trying to say. So just another brief overview of Berserk. Berserk takes place in a mythical medieval fantasy horror world where there are actual demons, and like actual demons just pop up out of nowhere and be snatching babies, eating people. Imagine Castlevania, but much, much more graphic.
Who would think that was possible?
And then, and there's it's been one of the longest running, like, series for a manga, and it was gruesomer than Castlevania before Castlevania for years. Mm-hmm. I think I did the math. This thing has been going on for over 20 years, if you count when it originally premiered in Japan, and then when it came over to the U.S., I think in the U.S. it came in 1996.
Right.
When they started printing it in English. So it's been going on for quite some time. I'm just setting this all up so I can give y'all the backstory on my two favorite characters. We have Guts, who is the main hero of the story, and you have Casca. She is his romantic interest, but before that, she was his commander in a mercenary army. They eventually fall in love. They have that romantic chemistry that I can't help when it's people that butt heads and argue with each other, and then they are great, like, compatible, and they comfort one another in ways.
Isn't it always the best trope, though, like, enemies to lovers?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, because she's just, like, truly has, like, she doesn't put up with his crap. Mm-hmm. And he has this whole, like, I don't understand why a woman's on the battlefield. Not in, like, a misogynistic thing. It's just, like, it's set in, like, a mythological, like, medieval times. So she's also a dark-skinned woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately love her already. And then she's the only warrior woman in their troop. It's like one of those things. Yeah, so I'm just kind of setting that all up. Okay, so I haven't even gotten to the volume yet. Okay, so at some point in the series, Guts and Casca go and rescue their friend Griffith. Griffith is the most terrible fuckboy manga character, anime character that has ever existed. And I hate him. I truly, truly hate him with all of my heart. Mainly because this man, because he was upset because Guts had left their mercenary group because Guts had decided he wanted to go on his own warrior's journey, blah, blah, blah. Griffith got in his feelings because he felt abandoned. So Griffith goes and gets himself in trouble. He ends up getting in trouble with the king. The king tortures Griffith so much that he rips off his muscles, rips off the man's toenails, fingernails, like really tortures him to the point where he's immobilized. Ew. It's gross, and it's very gruesome, and they show everything.
Very Ramsay Bolton.
Oh, yeah. Even worse than Ramsay. So Guts comes back. Him and Casca get together. Him and Casca make a plan to go rescue Griffith. They are all doing this to help Griffith achieve his goal. They then find a way to magically, hopefully, restore his body. They get Griffith to this thing. An event called the Eclipse happens. Okay. The eclipse is, I'm going to summarize, nobody murder me for what I say if it's obscenely wrong, but basically Griffith makes a deal with some demons to be reborn as another demon.
Of course he does.
And he betrays and he sacrifices everyone who was in their troop except for Guts and Casca. Then, as revenge for abandoning him, and I put abandoning in quotation marks, as revenge for abandoning him, he then decides that he's going to rape Casca in front of Guts and make Guts watch. And he does this by making the demons hold Guts back.
No.
And restrain us. Yes.
What?
I was just distraught.
Didn't he say pissed. The writer was going through some issues when he was writing these books?
No.
Was this or was it something else? Or was it another one?
That might have been another one. Hmm. Oh, no. This is the writer who has taken many hiatuses.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. He's taken a lot of hiatuses, which is understandable when you put out a manga. Mangas take up a lot of time and effort, and it's like he's also the writer and the artist.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and it's not just like he's doing it himself, because I imagine he has his own team, but it's still a very lengthy process, and each of these chapters are somewhere between 20 to 35 pages long. So that's a lot of work for a manga artist. So, and this event that I'm talking about happened nearly 20 years ago in the manga's time.
Right.
In our real-world time, it was 20 years ago, over 20 years ago. In the series time frame, it's 5 years ago. Right. Okay, so just to summarize. So, after Griffith is raping Casca... I know, it's my biggest pet peeve, because in order to get revenge on Guts, you must torture the woman who trusted you and followed you loyally for years. That makes complete sense. Anyways, after he does that, the event is so traumatic for Casca that it puts her into an infantile state mentally, that she is in so much shock that she loses her sense of self. Like, just... her capacity to think on her own is gone. She has basically almost like the mind of a child, because it has like it is so traumatic. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now I can tell you about this volume 40. So volume 40, as I said again, now we're like 5 years in the manga,
right?
Like in that world, 5 years later, after my girl has been trapped in this mental state for all these years, and all this time, they finally find a way to free her from this and restore her to her full self. Like, basically bringing her consciousness back to her body. So, in order to do this, they go to the land of the fairies, or elves. Fairies or elves, I think they're both. They bring them there, and they magically go into her mind. These two characters, their name are Farnese and Shriek, and like they're basically these two powerful witch girls, and they go into her mind, and now they have to battle against all of the, like, basically they see her nightmare dream world that she's been trapped in, and it's like all this symbolism, and they realize everything that she's been like seeing and feeling, and like the pain and what all that trauma did to her mentally,
right?
And how it has been, and how it has been trapping her for all these years, because she, and it's just like it's a lot, because instead of being able to process that pain, the shock and trauma of the pain forced her to just like revert it, like into letting her body go on autopilot.
Yeah. I know that can happen with trauma. Like you compartmentalize, and you shut down some certain parts of like your psyche. Yeah.
Yep. So, long story short, they spend the entire volume eventually getting her free and restoring her, and it's a lovely thing. You think it's going to be all happily ever after. She's now back to her former self. She's slowly remembering everything. They ask her, do you remember Guts? She smiles and blushes, and she remembers when they kiss, and then like it's all romantic and everything. And then they said, like, oh, well, he's waiting for you under that magical tree over there. So as she is just like 5 steps away from him, she gets a glimpse of him, and that's what triggers her to have a panic attack, and all the full memories of the traumatic event come rushing back to her. And that's where the manga ends.
Well, didn't they think this through? Didn't they think that seeing him would trigger her because he is connected to the memory?
Yeah, I think it's more like, Well, actually, it doesn't end there. Here's the thing. I think this is how I know the author loves to troll us. Her story ends there. The last two chapters in the volume switch to Griffith and what he's been doing.
So we're going to see from his perspective?
Well, we just see what he's been doing for, like, where he's at currently at that time frame. And I was pissed. I was a little mad.
I don't need to see his perspective. I'm like, Why do you need to do that?
No, we don't. But, I mean, like, it's not anything new. I mean, the book is so vast. And they, like, because at this point, I don't know. He's gone through some stuff over the years. I don't give a care. He's still garbage to me. But basically, his goal now is to, like, unite the realm and for mankind and to build a new utopia. I'd be like, yeah. And I'm just paraphrasing again. But anyways, yeah, they didn't think it through. I don't think they really, and I think my one comment I had made about this and the manga and the review is kind of like, trauma is hard. Trauma, and the thing about Berserk is there is always trauma in this manga. But I think the thing that the author really did a good job of is exploring trauma not only from the perspective of the person who went through it, but also from the perspective of the loved ones. So in this case, Casca's friends and, like, her lover. Everybody wants to restore her. Everybody wants her to be whole again. And, like, they think it's the best thing for her to allow her to make her whole again. And to rescue her from the deepest parts of her mind.
But they did that for them and not for her.
I think, yes. So part of that's just, like, for them, and they think it's what's best for her. And then it's, like, true, it is great that you restored her, but I don't think anyone thought that bringing her back, that she still has a lot of processing to do.
Right.
She still has a lot of trauma. And I mean, like, again, it's not like they got therapists.
This is true. I know we're thinking of it from a rural perspective where we'd be like, take time, give her time to process, don't introduce it to Geist because he was there when it happened. Like, you know, we're thinking very rationally about this and very realistically about this, but still.
I just hate that he's the trigger. I hate that, I know why he's the trigger. I just hate that he's the trigger.
I know.
Because it's not like it's only because, like, she immediately remembers everything vividly as it happened. So it's like now she has to relive through the trauma again. All I can hope for is when the next volume comes out, and I hope that's not another 6 months or a year from now, when the next one comes out, all I can hope for is that the story can take us to a place where we're seeing her process through that trauma now.
Yeah, well,
like, she's not it's no longer going to hold her back and be this basically this weight that's weighing her down from her, like, books, because she was a badass. She was like a leader. She was the second in command to an entire mercenary group of men in a medieval setting, like, and she was dope, and, like, she's still dope, but I want to see her move forward from her trauma.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean she has to completely forget about it, magically wipe it away, but I want to see her process through it and it not be something that she's bitter towards Guts about. Or that I want to see it actually, like, done with, like, and he does, and I think the author does a really good job of, like, tackling these topics, because I think that's something a lot of us can relate to, is that you find out a friend went through something traumatic and your first thought is like, I wish I could take it away from you.
Yeah.
I wish I could take your pain away. And, like, we can't. But it's also like, you have to realize that they have to go through their own process too.
Yeah. Well, for me, there's a whole other aspect of, like, them using, getting, like, fairies or witches or whatever to go into her mind and think. I'm like, that's another form of invasion there too. Like, again, they're invading her mentally and her and emotionally to achieve something that they think is best for her. And I'm like, you know what? Does no one see a problem with this either? Like, you're forcing her to go through something traumatic and to remember something traumatic that you did not have to experience. Like, no. Let's think about this.
Yeah. And I think that's something, that's a good point, because I don't think, and it's the thing is, like, she has no ability to really communicate her feelings. Like, she can do, like, the bare minimum, tell you when she's hungry, tell you, and then, but it's like, she was, like, literally just in this state where she wasn't even herself anymore. And it just seems like I think, of course, you want to help your friend get back to where they were. And I mean, the thing about it, when they were in the dream realm and everything, it's kind of like an inception. If you think of it, they basically inceptioned her.
Right.
Where, like, you see a representation of herself and how she sees herself in her mind as, like, this tiny little doll that's broken. And then the tiny little doll is, like, their guide through her dream world.
Well.
So it's kind of like, you could take that as, like, she wants to be saved, too. She wants to be whole, but she is scared and she's holding back because she feels broken.
Well, hopefully the writer, when he eventually resolves that he does it in a thoughtful way and that he doesn't, like, rush it. Cause
yeah. Oh no, he's not gonna rush it. It's but been 20 something years.
As time wise, I mean, like in developing how that progresses. Because I know it's gonna take time. Because this is a man who takes his time writing mangas, as you said. So yeah, but I just mean like throughout the story, like it doesn't like skip like weeks or months or whatever. But yeah, I just hope that it does stay. Oh, yeah. Because even in fiction, there's still ways that you should handle these kind of topics and stuff, because there are people who are going to read them and like might be triggering for someone or difficult for someone to read. So like, you got to think about that aspect too, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I agree with you there, because I would actually be kind of like, I would feel kind of cheated if we didn't get to see some of that process at least. Like give me at least 3 to 5 chapters of it, because that can span any time frame, but just don't rush it. I'm really looking forward to the next volume. He can take all the time he needs to write it and illustrate it. I'm just really looking forward to what happens next.
Yeah.
But sorry, that was a lengthy review. I felt like I had to give a lot of like background information.
The book itself is lengthy, so yeah, it's understandable. Oof. So girl, we're gonna move into films or TV shows. Which should we do first?
Let's do TV shows.
TV shows. So I'll go first. So for TV shows, I'm gonna do, as usual, a K-drama, and this is a new one. It has like multiple names, because some of these K-dramas can have like 5 different names, and this one is called Be Melodramatic, or Mellow Is My Name, which is how you would find it on which is how you would find it on Viki, which is where I watched it. So on Viki, it's Mellow Is My Name. So this one is a really interesting one. And I've noticed K-dramas themselves can have very realistic plot lines and stuff, but I've realized in the last, like, I would say 2 years, they've been really taking a lot of time to develop stories with realistic perspectives and how certain things like mental illness are handled with. And there's a film that, when it comes to talking about mental illness, one of the most popular ones is Okay, That's Love. And this one is kind of similar. Where it talks about grief and mental illness and being a single parent and like struggling and like achieving your dreams. So it's focused on 3 women. One is Im Jin-ju. She's a writer for drama TV shows. And the other one is Lee Eun-jung. She is a documentarian. And the third friend is Wang Han-ju, and I love the show. The show is so freaking funny. It's heartfelt. It's like realistic. I related a lot to it, again, unintentionally. But this one, like with Eun-jung, like her whole storyline is her fiance died, and like she's been like stuck in this emotional state where she sees him. Her brain literally did this thing where it shut off, and like as a coping mechanism, she sees him, she hallucinates him, and there's a term for it, and I forgot to write down the name of the term, but it's about prolonged grief. Like sometimes people have like a prolonged sense of constant grief. Like your brain, like the brain is a wonderful and miraculous thing. The way like we our brains protect us, so like in order for to protect her brain, like started creating hallucinations of her fiance, and she like see him, and she talked to him, and the way the writer handles this storyline is so beautiful, because it gives her time to process the grief. Like she didn't process it before, but the way it's going through, like the way how the writer like just developed her and showed her like either like saying, and no one rushes her about her grief, right? Like she has a brother, his name is Hyo Bong, And he's there for her. Like, her friends move into her home to be around her, to be there for her. And they don't rush her. They don't ever tell her, you need to get over him. They don't say, why don't you snap out of it? And they don't do that. They give her time to grieve, and they understand, and they're patient with her. And then for the other, and I think it's beautiful to see, and it's a different way of like discussing grief, where it shows from the perspective of the person experiencing grief that grief can manifest in different ways. And it's not only just crying, it's like, yeah, she's functioning, but there's things that other people, like, I never thought about someone literally hallucinating, seeing their loved one as a coping mechanism, but apparently this is something that does happen. This is something that people do, and I think the writer did a fantastic job. And then there's also the way how they handle going after your dreams. So, like, each of them represents something different. So, like, for Jinju, she's a drama writer, and her whole thing is she wrote this drama, and they're trying to get it produced, and she's trying to stay true to herself as a writer, but then she's also discovering things about herself as she's writing, and discovering things about her friends as she's writing. And the way how this show is constructed, I would love to sit down and talk to the writer, because it's like, it's a show about a writer creating a show that is eerily similar to the show we're watching. So it's like we're watching the writer of Be Melodramatic going through the process of creating Be Melodramatic. So it's like a self-insertion, like the writer's writing about themselves creating it as the show goes along. So I think that is genius, and it's executed brilliantly. There's like a lot of breaking of the fourth wall. And it talks about love, and the way how a lot of the moments are the fourth wall is broken is where you see the cast looks at the screen and looking at you at the audience, and they say sarange, which means I love you. But it's about different aspects. There's different types of love, right? So like they can be talking about agape love, eros love, philia love, all those kind of things. And they're like, it's about love. Just so it's a show about loving you and loving the people around you. And I think there's this term that a writer on Twitter, and it's called junk. So in it would be in romanization, it would be J-E-O-N-G, junk. And so it's this concept of love in Korean culture, where it's like you have this love for the people around you and the people in society, and it's like you show like respect and love to like people that you don't know, and it's not like ordinary love, but it's something specific to this culture. And I kind of like understand, because like in the Caribbean, like if we see like old people, and we like we refer to them as our grandparents. We would say, if we see like an old woman or old man, we would say grand, our grams, right? Our dads, we would respect them as we would respect our own grandparents. So it's something similar, and I related to that a lot. So the film, I keep saying from the show, these were that a lot. And it's funny in how like one of the things that K-dramas is known for are, I should say, inner dramas are known for product placements, PPLs. And this show, this is another way they break the fourth wall, in the fact that they will legit reference product placements, and they would say, yeah, we know we're promoting this. We know we're promoting this product. It is what it is. Like, we got to get the show made. They're like, how else are we going to get the show made? And I think that's brilliant. Like, I love that they're keeping you in reality, but reminding you that like you're still watching a show. So it's done really well. Mm-hmm. The music is, I love the music. It's really well shot. Like, the cinematography is really good. It's done in a way that it feels like you are there with them, and you're watching these friends, and you're a part of their family and their thing. And that's another thing about it is, I love this. I love stories about found families, like where you create your own family, because you might not necessarily be related. Yes. You might not necessarily be close to your blood relatives. So that's another thing, like where you can find people and they become part of your family, right? And I love those kind of storylines, because a lot of people that I'm close to are people, I'm like sometimes closer to people who are not my blood relatives. And like, I'm like, these are my found family. They're my family. I consider you my family. You're my sister. And aww, so same. So I love stories about that kind of stuff. And another thing about the show is it has an openly gay character, like he's homosexual, and this is Eun Jung's brother, Hyobong. So like, South Korea is a very conservative country, so like the way how like homosexuality is, it's like it's just there, and like people know about it, but it's not necessarily like openly discussed. So I think it's a really big deal to have a show where like, it's just a fact of life, like he is gay. Like, they even crack a couple jokes like, not about him being gay, but how people react to it and stuff. And I'm like, it's beautiful, because it's not a big deal. They're like, they just show him with his boyfriend, and like characters would say, oh yeah, they've been dating like for years, and that's it. Like, right? They don't, they like it, and they just love that they're like, we know that he's gay, and like, I think it's a really good thing that is being done like in a K-drama this way, and like maybe we'll see more of that in like future K-dramas. So I think it's really good that this, it was talked about in the show. I have two more episodes to finish. I have to watch the last two episodes. There is one part of the show that I'm not necessarily being too au fait with, and this is with a character, Jae-hoon, and he has this girlfriend. This girl is crazy, and I don't say that lightly. She has some issues. She's unstable. And I don't, when I don't like to use the word mental, like if you're talking about mental illness, I'm referring to someone as crazy. I think she's just crazy. Like she's very, as in she's extremely possessive. So it's not that she has a mental illness. She's possessive. She's manipulative. She lies to him and everything, and she makes him feel guilty about things. Like if he questions her and he like tries to stand up for himself, like she manipulates him, she gaslights him. And I think this is the first time where in a K-drama where you see, like, normally if you see like someone having this kind of behavior, it's a male character. So to see this in a female character and a young female character be manipulative of her boyfriend, that's good to see, because like we do need to talk about these discussions. But the only thing about it is I have this feeling that they might not be together, that they might go, but he left her, he broke up with her, and he's like, I can't do this anymore, because she cheated on him. And I'm like, yes, stand your ground, whatever. And I'm like, please do not send him back to her, because this is sending a very bad message, or it's a very mixed message. Apparently, from what I saw online, it could be an open-ended ending where like it's open to interpretation to the audience. And I'm like, well, in that case, I would prefer that they, if the ending scene is with them together, that he's telling her, listen, let bygones be bygones, but I don't need to have you in my life. Goodbye, have her be gone. And that's it. I don't want to imagine him back together with her, because it's sending a very bad message compared to what they're showing in the film, which is about moving on and learning to grow and accepting yourself and wanting better for yourself. Because that's one of the other things about the show. One of the messages is wanting better for yourself, especially when people doubt you. I'm like, he needs to want better for himself. I want better for him. He deserves happiness.
Yeah.
Like, please don't do this to this character. It would be uncharacteristic for the show. So if that's how it ends, I'm gonna choose to believe that in the end, like, they are not together. But yeah, so that's one of I think probably one of my favorite K-dramas for this year, and you can find it on Viki. It's a JTBC show, so it shows in South Korea Fridays and Saturdays, but the last two episodes added the last two episodes would have showed this weekend gone. So I have to get the last two, I have to get caught up, and then I'm done. But it's called, again, Be Melodramatic or Mellow Is My Nature on Viki.com. And I recommend anyone to watch it. Yeah. And there's this fun song. I'm not sure what the title is, but it's about shampoo. It's hilarious when you first hear it. You're like, what is going on here? But it actually works with the show. And I would just recommend it to like anyone to watch.
Nice. No, I might have to check that out. You have not steered me wrong with K-drama recommendations thus far. Yes, so I will continue to watch, because I'm still waiting for Kingdom Season 2. I need that to come back now.
I have
now
to check to see. I think they probably wrapped up filming by now. Should be. They're probably in post-production.
We are in full-blown spooky season now, and I would really, really enjoy my Korean drama zombie movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen any announcements for Kingdom, like, on, like, for the K-drama sites and stuff that I follow. I haven't seen any announcements about if it's finished filming or whatever.
It's been quiet. So, I just know we're getting one. I know we're getting the second season. I just haven't heard anything about when.
Yeah, I think, I know, like, they did go into production during summer, because I do remember a post about Baeduna starting filming. So, yeah, so it's probably going to wrap up. If it's not finished, it's probably going to wrap up soon, because it's going to be entering winter South Korea, because like they get like bitterly cold. Their winters get bitterly cold. I'm really looking forward to it, because that cliffhanger at the end. And for anyone, if you haven't seen Kingdom, go on, watch it. It's on Netflix. It's 6 episodes long. You can binge it in one afternoon. Watch it, go get scared, and be entertained. It's so good. It's so good.
Very, very good. It's my turn now. Keeping with the theme of weebdom, my little nerdy anime self, I've watched a new anime. I actually binged the first 2 seasons because I have no sense of pace. But anyways, this one is on Funimation. It's called Golden Kamuy. Mm-hmm. So basically, Golden Kamuy is this anime. It's on Funimation. I'm sure y'all can find it anywhere else y'all want to watch anime at. But long story short, this guy named Sugimoto, he is a veteran soldier. I don't know the exact year because I never saw a year posted, but it apparently happened during the Russian-Japan War. So it's definitely past the, they just ended the age of the samurai, like that era. They have entered the era of like more westernization in Japan. Like you see it starting to change over to that. So he's been in a war. His nickname was the Immortal Sugimoto because this man has been hacked at, shot at, but he just kept on fighting in order to live and survive. So he did whatever he needed to. This man got shot in the, like his, he got shot in the chest and kept running up a mountain to fight to take back all this territory. And like, this is one of the things in history where I wish like in high school they actually taught us like more about world history besides Britain and like America, besides those two things. Because I didn't know that the Japanese and the Russians had wars, and like a lot of this is based off of like historical things. Which I mean, of course, imperialism. So why not? So I just thought that was really interesting that this is a whole war that happened. So there's that part of it because I really like war and history and culture. And then another part of it is that the story also, so Asherpa is this young, I think she's 12 years old, and Sugimoto meets her by chance when he's in the woods. And it was after he was told this story, because Sugimoto, he's looking for gold. His best friend in the war with him had made a promise. He's like, if I die, please take care of my wife. She's losing her eyesight. No one's going to marry a blind woman. Can you please take care of her and take her to America? It'll cost 200 yen. So his friend dies, and they were childhood friends and everything. So, and he knows the girl. So he makes a promise to take care of her and get her the medical attention she needs to treat her eyes. So he figured the fastest way he can do that is by looking for gold, but all the gold is dried up in the river.
Things happen.
Yeah. Yeah, because of gold rush. So he, by chance, this old drunk man comes up to him and tells him a story like, oh, you're looking for gold? Well, let me tell you a story. Oh, there was this man. He stole all this gold from this indigenous tribe of people here in Japan. And he then, like, took it all and hid it. And then he was arrested. And he, like, did, like, he was a mass, like, he slaughtered all these people. So he slaughtered all these indigenous people for their gold. Basically, and when he was in prison, he made a deal with like 30 or so prisoners that if they let him tattoo the map, like the code for where the gold was at, onto their bodies, everybody would get a share. Well, the realization is the only way to tell the code would have been that none of the prisoners would live. Everyone would die because you'd have to flay them. You'd have to skin them in order to show the full code.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that's evil.
Yeah, he was evil. He evil man. Very, very evil. So that's just to give y'all the background there. As Sherpa and Sugimoto meet up, Sugimoto doesn't believe in the tale until the old man tries to kill him in his sleep, and he realizes that was real. You were telling the truth. So he kills the old man out of self-defense. Oh, yeah. And the old man tries to run away. He's been shot. A bear finds the old man. Like, almost eats the old man alive. But Sugimoto finds him. He takes the skin off of his body. A bear comes out, and a Sherpa, this 12-year-old little badass girl with the arrow and everything, takes down a bear. Mm-hmm. and she saves Sugimoto, and then that's where they make their deal. And he tells her about the gold and the story, and it turns out that she's a part of the tribe that the gold was stolen from.
Oh, plot twist.
So, yep, plot, good plot twist. So, basically, oh, and the tribe's name, this was the Ainu people. And the Ainu are based off of, like, an actual indigenous tribe of people that lived in an area of Japan. Mm-hmm. So, I thought that was also interesting. So, they make a deal that, like, yes. And then her other, another plot twist is she believes that her father was killed when that gold was stolen. Because he was there. So, she knows the story is true because a group of Ainu men were killed when the gold was stolen and her father was there. So, she says, okay, I'll help you so I can get justice for my father and for our people. And Sugimoto's not greedy. He's just, I just want 200 yen so I can help my best friend's widow and get her the help that she needs. And so they make a deal and then they embark on this journey to go hunt down the other prisoners. And so they're not as gruesome. They kind of make a promise where she's like, I don't want to kill anybody. He's like, look, I only kill people so I don't get killed. So their whole thing is kind of like, let's just capture them, copy down their tattoos. We'll figure it out along the way. But we will not. They kind of have the agreement of like, let's not kill anyone unless we have to. So it's kind of heartwarming because then along the way that like that she teaches him all these things about the wilderness and her people and their culture. And it's really, I think it's very educational because like I said, it's not like you get the opportunity to learn about this kind, this part of the culture in Japan.
But that's the thing. Like, I think you gotta go do research. So, like, if you, well, yeah, because then it will lead people to do research for it. But that's the thing. If I'm in North American educational system, like if you want to learn about these kind of things, you have to go and do the research on your own, right? Because like a lot of people, they the only international wars they really know about is like Second World War, First World War. Like here in Canada, there's the War of 1812. But like they don't know, like as you mentioned, there's the wars between Japan and Russia, but then there was also wars between Japan and South Korea because South Korea was because Japan, they basically subjugated South Korea for a period of time, and like it was imperialist, and like they did it with China too, but China also did it with a few other countries. Like there's a lot of different wars and stuff that a lot of people don't know about, and like I find like mangas and these kind of like animes are good because it might lead people to like do more research and learn for themselves. And it's the same thing kind of with like the K-dramas, but the K-dramas, like you do learn a lot about Korean culture. It's a lot of, it's fiction, but there's a lot of stuff that you can go do research on and like learn about like the culture and how they do things. And like one of the things that still boggles my mind is how drinking is such a big part of their culture. Like drinking soju and mekju, which is beer, is so predominant in their culture. It's such a part of their culture. Like for me, coming from the Caribbean, it's like it's kind of similar where like you have the rum shops and like men would like people would go to rum shops at the end of the day and go and like just drink for like 2-3 hours straight before going home or whatever. And in South Korea, there's something similar where like you, it's like a social thing, but it's also like a work we're obligation to, where like if your boss invites you and say come, we're gonna go to Nurebang, which is karaoke, and they're like, you kind of have to go, right? Because it's all about seniority and it's about station. And like, if your superior asks you to come, you as the subordinate, you kind of have to. So it's like learning about these different things. And that's why I think, that's why I kind of like glad that we watch different things from the different places of the world, because we learn about different things and we can share it with our listeners, like you guys listening, and even and those who read our posts and stuff. And it's interesting because like history is important, and learning about different cultures and different events all across the world is important. And like anime dealing something with like this, it would be important. Yeah.
Oh, no, I that's exactly why I really like it, is because it's like anime is one of my favorite mediums to like watch and be entertained with. But I think it's also very like really well done that you get to learn something about a culture. And it did spark my interest to like, oh, let me read up more about, like I didn't, I would, like you said, like the educational system, we in America, North America, I guess as a whole also is like, it's not like we really have the opportunity to learn every country's culture. Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of like, that's a lot of history to cover, and then even in world history everything isn't covered, so I think it's really interesting. I'm like, basically it's nice that this anime gave that, like, highlighted this culture in Japan where a lot of people aren't even probably aware of that these people existed. And it's kind of like, oh yeah, there were people called the Ainu that lived there, and they, like, these were these indigenous people, and they were seen as separate from the Japanese. Like, they were treated as different completely. Like, they had their own language and everything. So it's like, I think I just thought that, like, oh, that's really, really interesting to have, like, to learn that. And then, like, the way they teach you other stuff along the way through the anime, which, of course, like, there's, like you said, there's fiction, but like you said, the K-dramas, it's interesting that we get to learn something along the way as we're being entertained.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to learn. Learn while you're being entertained.
Yep. Yep. I guess one other thing I really enjoy about this. So, fight scenes are great. Lots of action. The story is really interesting. However, another thing, instead of doing fan service with the women characters, like most anime usually does, they do fan service with the male characters, and all the men are like bulky, buff, and like grisly looking men. Okay. So, I just, like, there's an episode where they all go to, like, a bathhouse. Mm-hmm. And instead of, like, in typical anime fashion, they would, like, have the shots of the steam covering the girls' like body parts, but then, like, doing a lot of revealing stuff with the women. They don't do that, which I'm glad, because the little girl's 12 and the other woman is like 18 or whatever. Ah. So I'm glad that's not done here. And regardless of age. Mm-hmm. But it was funny, because I'm like, I think this is the first time I've seen one besides like Yuri on Ice where the men are the ones objectified, which people might have issues with that. But I just found it funny because 9 times out of 10, when you watch anime, they usually do fan service primarily with the female characters.
Yeah.
And so I just thought like, look at them flipping the script. And it was just more like the steam and like seeing a big old burly chest.
Well, like, this kind of, again, with the Korean dramas, there's just law. It's called the unofficial third rule of K-dramas, where you have to have a steamy scene of the male lead taking a shower. You don't see everything, but you see enough, and you're like, you know what? Written for the female gaze. And I was worried, because I haven't seen it in a few dramas, but there's a new one called Vagabond. It's on Netflix, people. Starring my boo, Yi Sung-gi, and I'm like, oh! There's my fan service. There's my female gaze. Like, thank you very much. I'm like, you know what? I appreciate you. I appreciate this. Because, like, we see enough of women. You always get butt shots of women in Western media. Like, oh, you know, like, the camera pans up from the woman's foot up to her legs. And you see her, her tush and her breasts. And I'm like, I'm like, Kate Ramos, they're like, no, we're going to show you men bathing in hot steam. And it's always a hot, steamy shower.
Look, I want equal fan service, if anything. I just want some equality to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Just because, like, exactly what you said, like, if I can throw a stone inside a TV show where you see the woman, like, more of her body than you see the man, mm-hmm. so I'm just gonna be like, look, I want equality for it all. But yeah, so that's what I've been watching. I really enjoyed it, so y'all can check that out if y'all are interested. And lastly, let's move into the movie corner. Sorry, y'all, this is like a little extra long episode, but we had a lot to catch up on.
Yes. For my film, I am going to do mm-hmm. The Sound of Metal, which again showed at TIFF. And this one stars Riz Ahmed, Olivia Ooh, Cook, yay. Lauren Ridolph, Matthew Amarak, and it was written and directed by Abram. Well, directed by Darius Mader, but written by Darius Mader and Abraham Mader. I think it's Mader. It's M A R D E R. So if I'm saying it, I believe it's Mader.
Mader.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. it's about a heavy metal drummer whose life is thrown into chaos, basically, or free fall, when he begins to lose his sudden hearing suddenly. So it's like spontaneous hearing loss because of all the noise that he's been listening to as a heavy metal drummer. And this is, this film was an interesting experience, and for two reasons. One, thematically, like as a cinema experience, is very interesting because the way they do the sound design. I think the only other film that I've experienced in cinema that has such an amazing sound design would have been last year, would have been Roma, and this year I hope they do get nominated for sound design for the Oscars. I believe they deserve it because it's told from the perspective of Ruben, who's played by Riz Ahmed. Like, you hear how he's losing his hearing. Like, there's there's this condition called tinnitus, which is you know, that high pitched ringing that you can hear in your ears, but then it also like goes into muffle. It's like becomes muffled. Like, he'd be hearing someone talking, and then all of a sudden it gets muffled, and then you hear different aspects of it. So it's all like there's different. I guess I want to say shades to how he hears, mm-hmm. and so that was really interesting to experience. It was kind of discombobulating for me because I have MS. And one of the symptoms of my MS is it affects my auditory senses, so like my hearing, and I do get tinnitus. I get the high pitched ringing, the muffling. Like sometimes I do lose hearing, like for like a couple seconds. Like I have, I think it's 15% hearing loss in my left ear. So like, it was weird hearing that on screen and kind of experiencing it at the same time as I was watching it, because like when the audio went. Hit certain pitches, it kind of like triggered like the tinnitus. So it was kind of weird hearing it coming from the speakers and hearing it in my head at the same time. So that was a weird and interesting auditory experience. But Riz Ahmed was great. He's so good. Like I want to see him in more films like this. Like he continues to like in each film that he's in successively get better and shows people what he can do as an actor. And he as Ruben, he's You see how like he's trying to cope, or not even cope, like trying to come to terms with what's happening. At first, he's resistant and he's in denial. He's like, "No, I can't get back my hearing." He wants to get a cochlear implant because he's like, "I have to. I'm a drummer. I'm a musician. I have to get my hearing." He's like, "How am I as a musician gonna go about life, deaf?" And it wasn't only that he was becoming deaf, but for him, because he is a musician and like hearing is like how he is as a musician. So like he's struggling with that, and he goes into this this facility for drug addicts. So he's a recovering drug addict, right? And so this is for drug people who are specifically are deaf or becoming deaf and have a history of drug addiction, because something like this, something as traumatic as this, could become a trigger. So it's about helping them not only cope with the deafness, but also give them tools on how to cope with it without reverting back to drugs. So I thought that was an interesting aspect of it too. And like, you see him begin to learn sign language and like see him like learn how to communicate with people in a new way. And another thing is, because he's an adult and he's going deaf as an adult, he has to go into a school for deaf children, and he is as an adult is in a class surrounded by children learning how to navigate life as a deaf person. So he's learning everything from scratch. He has to learn sign language from scratch, and he's learning with children, right? And these children know more than him because they've been in school longer than he has. So that's another interesting aspect. And like for me, like this was like for me, as I mentioned, because I have MS, like this is another one of those films during the festival where I was like, ah, crap, where it hit me emotionally, but on a different level, because I'm like watching this character learning how to cope with losing a part of himself. And but also discovering a part of himself, because with MS, like there's limitations, there's things that I can't do as well as I used to be able to do them, right? Like hearing, like my hearing is like progressively getting worse, and like my speech, it affects my speech and the way I walk and the way I move and stuff. So I like to see him like learning how to cope and navigate life with this new disability was was very personal. It was a very personal experience for me to see as well. And also one of the characters in it is Lauren Ridloff. Now, yeah, you might recognize her name. She's going to be in the MCU film. My gosh, help me. The one with...
I'm looking up her face right now.
Oh, my... The Eternals.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She's the deaf actress, right? Yeah, so she's going to be in the Eternals. So it was when I saw her, I'm like, that's the chick that's going to be in the Eternals. I'm like, yeah. So like, it's like you have... So it's interesting. So we saw her, and she is deaf in real life. So we have a actor who is... playing a person becoming deaf. I think that's also important to do, because normally we would say you can have a deaf actor playing a deaf character, but the difference is this is an actor who is playing a person who was hearing becoming deaf. So that's where I didn't have a problem with him playing this character, because it's not the film doesn't start with him being deaf, right? So it's showing the progression of someone losing their hearing and stuff. So I thought it was interesting, but it's also important to see a character who is deaf played by a deaf actress. So that was great to see as well. It's beautifully shot, like the way how they use sound in the film, like you hear like rustling things, like wind moving through trees and through grass, and it's like showing you how people who with hearing take things for granted, like something as simple as wind moving through grass, or like the flap of a bird's wing, or like, you know, or like something hitting the ground. Like for us, those are like things we don't even pay attention to unless it's like an annoying sound or like something specific. But like for him, like for Ruben, is like he's beginning to realize how important these little everyday details are. And so I thought that was another really important way where it's like telling you to value what you have, but it's also showing you that if you do lose your hearing, like it does change your life and it does change you, but it's not, and it is a disability, but it's not one where it makes you less than, right? And that's another thing that Ruben had to deal with. He had to realize that being deaf doesn't make him less than, and
yeah,
it's something that he doesn't have to, like, he eventually comes to a realization that it's not, there's nothing wrong with being deaf, because he wanted the cochlear implant and stuff. And it's understandable, but it's about the whole thing of like, I'm deaf and that's a fact of life, and it doesn't make me less than anyone else. So it doesn't make me less than people who can hear or you know. So I thought it was a very important message in the film too. So I really love that. I love Riz Ahmed's performance.
That sounds really good.
It was really good. Like, I would recommend anyone see it. You have to see it in cinema. But I would give a caution. There's like a scene, like the first 5 minutes were very intense for me, because there's like strobe lighting. And because it takes place in like a concert hall, so you know there's like the strobe lights and everything, and that combined with the music was very was a bit overwhelming for me. So I would caution anyone who is sensitive to like strobe lights, like I am. It's nothing near as bad as like The Incredibles 2, but I would caution anyone to like just be careful in the first 5 minutes. I had to close my eyes because I couldn't take the audio and the visual at the same time, so I had to close my eyes and take in the audio. So that's the only caution I would have for that film.
That definitely sounds like a lot. And I know, like, kind of, I appreciate you making that comment about Riz Ahmed, like, how he's obviously, like, he can hear, but, like, him being in that role, because that was going to be my question, but, like, it makes sense for him to play that role, but it is good that, like, that they can, like, have that perspective from that person. But then I like the lesson being taught, because I think that's just like one of those things, like I really, really hate when people go on Twitter and they be like, oh my God, I pray that I never lose this, or like, oh, I'm so blessed to have my legs and have my sight. And like, it just, I don't care for ableism. I don't think anyone should. It just, I always feel like people are just so quick to feel that without without an ability, that they are no longer the person they used to be. And that's I can understand going through a process and then like grieving something that you've once had and taking it for granted and not thinking it would be gone. I mean, I say this as like 2 years ago, I almost lost my eyesight, because of a pseudo tumor. And I was freaking out. I was just like, "What? How will I live? How will I do that?" And then like it really made me have to like check myself. I'm like, I'll still be myself. I'll still be Nisha. It'll be something different about me that I'll have to get used to if I did lose my sight. It just made me think like there's people that go through, like they are either born with it or they lose an ability or something changes and they still live their lives to the fullest. Yeah. And I think a lot of that's from fear. I just don't like when people like do it in a very like ableist way. Like, I don't know how else to, what another word to say it is.
No, it is, because there is this thing, and I think part of it is how society looks at people with disabilities, where they're like, oh, how will I live? And I did have those kind of moments, because, like, there is the MS, and, like, I'm like, it's a progressive disease, right? It will get, like, even with treatment and stuff, like, it does get better, because, like, my range of motion does change, and, like, as time goes on, like, my left side is more affected than my right side. Like, my hands are weaker, my left hand and my left leg are weaker than my right side. And like, every time you go to the doctor, he's like, it's just, like, you can tell there's just a bit more weakness than it was the last time. And, like, the hearing, like, it is getting, like, worse. And, like, in my left ear, like, losing my weakness, my hearing is, I can tell this, it's going. And then there's things like vision and stuff. And, like, these are things I've talked about. I'm like, how will I ever, like, if I ever get to the point where I have to use a walking aid, like, I'm going to have to learn to adjust. You know, like, even though I have to learn to adjust, like, if I'm feeling tired, I have to learn, okay, don't push myself too hard. I have to learn to, you know, like, take breaks and that kind of stuff. And that's the thing, like, we, like, society has taught us that if you're disabled, you have to be fixed, that your disability has to be fixed. And, like, people are like, we're going to have to come up with these extremely expensive devices to help you walk. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with not being able to walk. Wheelchairs are fine. How about you just, put up a ramp? Why are you coming up with these things that are going to cost, like, things that 90% of people with disabilities aren't even going to be able to afford, because you want us to look like everyone else? Like, there's nothing wrong with being in a wheelchair. Just give just give people accessibility. Give them wheelchairs. That's, like, one of the films that I saw TIFF also, that I did a review for, called 37 Seconds. It's about a character with cerebral palsy played by the act, and the actress has cerebral palsy. And it's like, they made a whole film about this character and this actress, and, like, they made it work. And I'm like, society has to be like that. Like, make it work for people with wheelchairs, make it work for people with disabilities, make it work for people who are deaf, make it work for people who are blind. You know, like, just make it work. You have the tools, like, you can do it. So that's the thing. Exactly. The film is, like, he has to learn that this is a part of his life, and there's nothing wrong with being this way. And I think that's a beautiful thing, and I hope more people see it, not only just for that film, but just for that message as well.
But yeah, like, I love that message. I think that's a perfect message to end on. And it's not about him saving his hearing. It's about him coming to acceptance of the change. I think that's really, really touching.
Yeah, and it's done in a very subtle way. It's not, like, very blatant. It's just all about, a lot of it is conveying the acting. Riz Ahmed's and, like, his expressions, where you see, like, certain things that, like, he'll be like, okay, you can see, like, moment. Like, it's just, like, if you just read his, expression, his facial, you'll see where his character is going, what he's thinking. And I think he's done a brilliant job with doing that. Like, he is a very expressive actor. So that was good. So that was one of my favorite films at TIFF as well. So, Sound of Metal, people.
Nice.
If it goes into cinema, watch it.
Hope so. Okay, so to round things out, I watched It Chapter 2. Karen, I'm sorry. I realized that movie came out much earlier this month, so it kind of works out. I watched It Chapter 2. Honestly, I'm a big Stephen King fan. I really, really enjoy Stephen King. all the books I've ever read, even though some of them give me nightmares. But it's really, really good. So basically, the synopsis is, for y'all who are familiar with the story, and I feel like everyone else should be by now, but anyways, y'all know the story. The Losers Club from It Chapter 1, they all have grown up. They are adults now. They then find out that Pennywise, the evil clown that terrorizes Derry, has come back after his 27 years of slumber and has started killing children again. And now they made a promise to come back if he were still alive after they had defeated him the first time. Then they all are reached out to from the one person who stayed in the town, Mike, in order for them to come back so that they can defeat him for one final time for good. And nightmarish things ensue. I'll say this, if scary things, like if you were scared by like little, not little, I don't know what y'all gotta give me what your threshold for like fear is, like the clown eats children, like this is a rated R movie and the clown is demonic and eats children. So it
shows him eating
so it doesn't show him biting a child. Nope, the first one you see him bite off the child's arm
in the first film. The original one or the one that came out like 2 years ago?
The one that came out 2 years ago. So I think the original probably wasn't as graphic. I don't think. But this one's much graphic. It's like, in the beginning, it starts off this gay couple. They're leaving the town's festival. They're attacked by some homophobic people of the town. And the boyfriend, the one who's from the town, his boyfriend is thrown over into the river, and Pennywise like grabs him as if he's helping him, and he's unconscious, so he doesn't know what's happening. And Pennywise, like, he grabs the boyfriend rushes down to try to save him, and he makes eye contact with Pennywise. Pennywise looks at him, waves at him, smiles, and like, again, for y'all who don't know, Pennywise is a demonic looking clown, like, but he looks like a happy clown.
No, he doesn't.
Kind of different. Well, no, he doesn't. Like,
I hate clowns. No clown looks happy to me.
Girl, same. But it's kind of like, if any child would know in the year of 2019, with the way that clown looked, that's not a clown. That's a demon.
I don't go talk to him. Clowns are funny. I've never liked clowns. I hate them.
I'm not a fan. I'm really not a fan.
I know what anyone would say. Oh, there's something. Like, where? When? How?
No, I would love for someone to do a documentary on the study of like how clowns have become like this very demented thing.
Because they look evil. It's a fake smile. Like nothing more. Nothing more thing than that.
I also, but like I associate it with all like the demented things about like John Wayne Gacy, the serial killer who would dress up as a clown. Like how like to the public he would like do all these charity events as a clown, but then he was a serial killer. Like that's my association with clowns. Like they're hiding something behind them, and it freaks me out. So, sorry, a little true crime there for y'all. this is not a true crime podcast though. But yeah, so then in the scene with the boys at the river, he like bites out his chest, like his heart, and eats him in front of the boyfriend. Like, so it's that graphic. There's a bunch of jump scares. The people, like, the friends eventually come together, and they're able, and, like, they have to face their fears all over again. And it's just like, dear God, it's like having to face your fears, like, your worst nightmares, and then, like, doing it all over again, like, after they've left the town, and then they have to come back to fight them again. I'll just be like, well, bye. I'm not coming back. I moved away for a reason.
Exactly.
But then, like, but the interesting thing is that, like, you find out why it was so easy for them to just leave the first time. Because, like, because of the promise they made and because of them being able to survive the first time, they realized that they basically have this curse put on them that if they don't kill him now, then they'll die they'll die soon. Like, everyone's going to die, but, like, they'll die like, because they weren't able to kill him. And the clown is basically just, like, trying to run out time in order for them to not... Either he'll kill them or he'll, like... Or they will die because they weren't able to defeat him.
Oh, okay.
Because they were able to survive. And then... And because they moved away from the town, they basically lost their... They forgot about everything. They didn't remember anything until the one friend who stayed in the town for those 27 years called them and said, he's back. Like, they had no memory. Like, everything was kind of foggy. So, it's really... I mean, at the end of the day, it's just like a lot of Stephen King's books. It's a story about how friendship and coming together can defeat an evil, demonic being.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I feel like that's a theme in a lot of his stuff, but I think it's really... This one, I was really impressed with Bill Hader's performance in it.
Bill Hader, y'all might know him from Saturday Night Live. He was her favorite character. Mm-hmm.
He's very much, like, I forget that, like, Bill Hader is a really, really good actor. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the kid in the group who was, like, the smart ass and always making jokes and all this stuff. And it's like, do you care about spoilers?
No.
I know I ask you this every time.
No, I don't care. Audience, if you don't care, turn the volume down.
Just skip over.
Skip over.
I mean, it's been out for a month. Yeah, it's been out for a month by now. Basically, Pennywise knows all their deepest, darkest fears, and he uses that against them. Mm-hmm. So Bill Hader's fear is, I guess, one of his fears. He has a fear of clowns, but... Another one of his fears, apparently, is that he has a secret, and it's the assumption that he's queer. Mm-hmm. Not the assumption, but, like, he's queer. It's not that he ever says it out loud, but Pennywise uses, like, I know your secret, your dirty little secret. Like he taunts him with it. And it's like, here's a man in 2019, and he's afraid of being outed, but it's, like, also because, like, that's been his fear all along.
Right.
Ever since he was a child, and, like, growing up in the town that he grew up in, and the homophobia that was persistent there, and just, like, all the prejudice and all the other things, he was afraid to ever, like, be himself or, like, ever, like, face that part of himself. So right. it's not said out loud, but it's also kind of seen in the way that he act through his acting, that he had a crush on his childhood friend. That he really cared about him, like doing the thing that kids do when they like somebody, picking on them, making jokes at them, like not like in a big bullying way, but like he would always be the one that he would look out. He would kind of look out for him as a friend, but also be like giving him a lot of crap. Mm-hmm. So, and then it's like just like the performance that Bill Hader does. I'm just like, wow, this is really good. And he's like meant to kind of be like the, what's it called? The person that makes like the comic relief in some scenes. But then it just, like, I'm just, the actor I was most impressed with the whole movie was him, like, by far. Mm. So, and it's just, I think it was really well done. But yeah, I mean, I'm a sucker for horror movies right now. I need all of them that I can get. And I'm just surprised that I can't think of anything good, like, that I'm really excited to see come out this month.
The only thing that's coming out is Joker, and, well, yeah, I hate that film. But anywho, we will not get into that. I can't think of any films or many big films are coming out. There's probably some indie films. Oh, I'm wrong. Parasite? Coming out on October 25th. I know here in Canada, but I'm not sure about American cinemas. Uh-huh. By Bong Joon-ho, starring Park So-dam. Watch it if you can. This is the one film I gave a 10-10-2. A 10 out of 10 from TIFF. It's my number one film at TIFF. It is perfect in my eyes. You can't dispute me any.
What's it called?
Parasite.
Parasite. Is it Parasite with a Y?
Parasite with an I.
Okay. Sorry. There is another Parasite movie that's spelled with a Y, and it's based off of an anime, and that's why I was just like, can't be right. That was in 2019. No, this one, here it is. It's 2019.
2019 by Bong Joon-ho, director of Memories of a Murder. He's one of my favorite directors. He's one of my favorite Korean directors. Mm-hmm. His films are like always like so well crafted, and this film is like legit. This film, the way how he intertwines like different storylines, and he tells a story about society and classism and like I did a review for it. Like, you guys will find, you can link the review to it in the blog post. But, like, yeah, I think that's the only film coming out in October that I'm looking forward to. Okay. Yeah, that's the only one.
Well, and for, yeah, so I don't think it'll come out here. But you know what? To help fix my craving movies. Oh, sorry.
Gemini Man, starring Will Smith.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I'm going to watch that.
It's coming out October. I think it's coming out it's coming out October.
Ooh. Okay, yeah. I'm definitely going to check that one out then. But I did, because you were talking about Korean films, I did just remember what's coming up. I'm not sure. We might be able to have this episode up in time to let you guys know, but I can at least announce it here. But why, though, is we are hosting Spook... Well, sorry, I'm going to redo this part. I have a lot to edit.
Yeah, you glitched out there just now for a moment, so I missed what you said after Korean something.
Okay, so since we were talking about Korean dramas and movies, I just remembered that this Sunday Dang it. Okay. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear, but like, as soon as you say the word Korean, it, like, it goes...
Maybe. Okay.
Maybe you should say South Korean.
I'm going to close up... Yeah. Let me just, like, close this... We'll close up this part, and then, like, I'll cut it off. Don't cut it off. Sorry. My bad. And with that, guys, I guess that concludes our reviews for this month. I just have one announcement to make. But why, though? This is actually something that Kate, our editor-in-chief of the website, had an idea for, and it's the Spooky Sundays. Mm-hmm. And this Sunday, October 6th, depending on when you hear this episode, we will be watching Train to Busan.
Yay!
Yes, our favorite movie. So I will put Carolyn's favorite movie also of all time.
It is really.
But yes, it was. Oh, it's so good. It's so, so good. But anyways, y'all can please feel free to tune in. I'll put the link in the show notes. But basically, you get to join us in the But Why the Discord. It's kind of like we're all sitting together watching a movie, talking to one another. And we're just having a big old fun movie night. Last weekend, Kate and I, we were watching Scream. A few people popped in and out of there and joined us. It's okay if you don't feel like listening to people talk. You can always, like, text in the chat, talk about the movie. You can live tweet along with us. But it's really just meant for a great way for everyone to get in the mood for spooky season and watch really good horror movies.
I had joined the Discord a little too late because I couldn't take part. So, and this is like... I've never used Discord before. So Discord, we can hear each other chatting about the film.
So it's not just texting. So we have these. Yeah, so it's kind of like we have voice channels. So when I'll show you how they work. But basically, you go into the horror voice channel, and that's how when it's time for the movie, everyone can be talking in there with one another, sharing commentary and talking about it together.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just like text thing. Anyways, it can do like audio. Well, kind of makes sense because we're kind of recording through Discord. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it'll be a lot of fun. But I will also drop the Discord link in the show notes for anyone who else is interested. So this Sunday, again, we'll be Train to Busan. We start at 7 p.m. Central Time. So that's 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't ask me about any other time zones. I'm terrible at doing that math. Mm-hmm. And then the following Sunday, October 13th, it will be Halloween, will be the movie. And yeah, so... We will put that information. Y'all come along, tweet along with us, watch in the Discord, whichever you want to do. It's all fun. And with that, do you have any announcements, Carol?
Same thing for, as you guys know, I do a weekly live tweet called Saturday Night Sci-Fi on Twitter. And just like with But Why Though, we also have a Halloween-themed live tweet for the month. And our first film would be The Cell this Saturday night. It's on Netflix, and we will begin at 10 p.m. Eastern time. So this is the one starring Vincent D'Onofrio, Vince Vaughn, Jennifer Lopez. I watched this film years ago when it came maybe like 6 months after it came out, because I'm like, I don't deal with demons and that kind of stuff, because, you know, growing up in the Caribbean and a very Christian household, we don't play with demons and supernatural shit like that. But because I haven't seen it since then. So this would be my first time watching it as an adult. And it should be interesting. I do remember it's an extremely beautiful visual film. Like, the visuals are stunning. We'll see how I make it through with the whole horns and vivisected horse and, you know. Should be fun. But we're doing it in honor of J-Lo and Hustlers and her amazing performance. And so that's our first film for October. And we're hoping to do The Crow, should it still be available on Netflix. So that might be the week after. We'll see. So look out for those announcements. So you can follow our previous film live tweets. Just follow the hashtag Saturday Night Sci-Fi, S-C-I-F-I. And you can follow me on Twitter at CarrieCNH12, CarrieCNH12 on Twitter and Instagram, which I always forget that I have. And you can also find I have on my pinned tweet is the thread of my interviews and film reviews that I've done for TIFF, so you can also do that. And I think that's it for announcements.
Sweet. Alrighty. Well, with that, we are going to head on out. As always, you can find me on Twitter at LA_NEY_SHA. And Carolyn, where can I find you?
Again, on Twitter, CarrieCNH12. I tweet a lot about, Lanisha, I tweet a lot about TV, films, occasionally politics, thirsting, music, K-dramas. That is it.
Thirsting and ranting. That's my brand.
That's what we do.
Yeah. Yep, that is what we do. Also, you can find me, you can also find the show at SHWH_pod. And check us out over there. We try to post things regularly, tweet about stuff.
I need to do better at tweeting from the account. I've been quite lax recently. I need to do better.
Girl, it's been a busy month, but we will do better. Maybe I'll tweet from that for this week's movie with Train to Busan.
Oh, we'll so you'll that. Tweet as you're chatting in the Discord?
Oh, I think, yeah, I might do. My voice will be in the Discord, but I can always tweet from the... here's what happened.
We could do that. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll do that then. But y'all can tune in, and we'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye. Have a good month, everyone.
Bye.